this is Transduction Signal on Dub Lab Radio. I'm your host, Travarsi, along with Orly Gal. Join us each month as we have a special guest come on, share a performance. We get into their live setup. We talk about their journey through music. Orly, who do we have this month?
Today, we have Blush Response with us, also known as Joey Blush. He resides in Berlin, but he was born in Miami and he's Cuban American. He is a renowned designer. He's worked with companies like Electron, Yamaha, and Arturia. And he tours as a solo artist and also with bands. And he owns the Megastructure label as well.
All right, so let's bring him in. Hey.
Hi, how's it going?
Thanks for being here. Like, I'm sure Orly does, but I have so many questions for you. You're an amazing artist. You also have a YouTube channel, which we'll get into all that later. But first, we want to share your performance. Before we do that, do you want to say anything or go for it, or however you want to kick it off?
Yeah. So I'm Joey Blush Response. Obviously, the video you're about to watch is the initial jam of a track on my new album Sprawl called Bahamut. On the album, the track is edited a bit, but this is like the first initial jam, so you can see it in its rawest form.
Oh, very cool.
Exciting.
All right, let's mute up and.
Thank you.
That was incredible. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love how it just kept unfolding. You know,
that was the intention there. I wanted to, like, that was intentionally me trying to be like, what happens if I make a 14 minute track? How would it work out? So that was the goal.
Were you into it?
Yeah, definitely. It's on the album, so.
I know, but you know, like, once you get lost in it, it's like, do you get in your head? Is it too long? Are things unfolding, you know, correctly? Is that enough tension? Oh. You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, I would say that I was really happy with that one and how it came out. There's another one I tried to do in that same kind of format that I didn't put on the album. And that one, I was like, this didn't come together. But Bahamut, this one I felt was smooth. I think I cut it in the end to maybe like 10 minutes, just because I felt like it maybe went a bit too long here and there. But in the moment when I was doing it, I was like, this is exactly what I wanted it to be, you know?
So. Epic. Yeah, no, it was epic. Like you could literally hear, I was like, all right, where is it going as it like builds, and it just kept unfolding. Question, like, what was that the lead voice where all of a sudden you brought in like this defined like sequence? You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
that's the cycle box.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was very cool. Like all the layers, very interesting stuff. And
thanks.
Yeah, so do you want to first, before we start asking you even more questions, like talk about what it was that you were using in your studio, because you have a great workflow. So just maybe
in that jam specifically?
In that jam specifically, like what were some of the key elements?
In that one, all the drums or most of the drums were from the rhythm. Maybe one kick might have come from the modular. I don't remember, because that's like quite old now. But definitely the cycle box was that like kind of bass sequence, whatever you want to call it. I know the Instruo CSL was in the earlier part of the track, and there's kind of like a looping pad that goes through the whole track. That's the 4MS ensemble oscillator with some reverb. And then I was using Push 3 to control the Waldorf Quantum and play pads on top in many parts. And then I think that's everything. There's
the Waldorf Quantum, the thing that you pushed your palm into, like that looks like a Chaos Later. You were controlling
palm. Yeah, that's the Push 3 I was playing. The Quantum it's out of the camera frame, so I control it from the Push 3 because
what's the thing that you're putting your hand into that was controlling the sequence? It sounded like a synth.
Yeah,
I think it's the Push 3. Yeah,
Push 3.
Yeah, it's right behind me there. Yeah.
All I saw was this. I was like, yes.
Yeah. I was playing the keyboard on it.
Yeah.
I really like that thing. I like that keyboard because you can pick a key and set it so it's only that. And then you can hit whatever and you never hit a bad note. And it's just it's so free.
You know? Right. Yeah. You don't have to think about it. You could just play. Yeah. No, yeah, it sounded fantastic. Yeah. And then you were kind of doing some tweaking. It was like in your top part of your case where it was kind of creating these little like bubbly washes. I know it was like, you're like, be more specific, but.
I mean, I know at the very end.
Yeah.
Well, the cycle box was going through the triptych from SSF. So there's like a lot of comb filter action going in different parts in the breaks. And then at the very end, I got into like a vocal drone zone. And that was the CSL. And that was a surprise too, because I didn't know what was going to happen. So once I heard that, I was like, oh, I got to mess with that for a little longer. But yeah, I don't know the wash thing, exactly what that was.
Nice. Do you find that like when you're patching and creating in your studio, you have that push and pull, like you know, like those little happy accidents come up?
Oh yeah, 90% of the time. That's the best part.
Nice. Okay, so about your setup, like I like that. Is everything literally connected? So if you push play, it's just whether you want to use it or not. Is that your
everything that you see in like my Instagram videos and whatever is connected.
Like but on I have other stuff, like synths and stuff. Got it.
I have other stuff in boxes and closets and whatever. But if it's on the wall, it's connected. And then I take things out and put other things in over time, just to have variety and whatever. But yeah, the whole idea is about efficiency, because I hate situations where you're like, oh, I want to record this thing, but I have to spend 10 minutes plugging it in and then assigning an input and whatever. That's a fucking nightmare for me. So it's all ready to go. I have an audio interface with 30 inputs, and everything is assigned. Ableton opens up with every channel assigned, labeled, some basic effects on there, effects sends and EQ, and it's all ready to go. I have permit patched outputs for my modular that I can patch right into, so I don't need to look for an output ever.
Nice. Now, when you first started, were you always that organized, or what was it like when you first started playing live?
Like playing live, like, or first started music?
First, well, both. Tell us a little bit about both. Just curious. Oh,
I
mean, like,
when I first started music, I was 16 years old. That was 20 years ago. I just had a microcorg, and you know, I would record it directly into the input on the side of my laptop, because I didn't know about audio interfaces or anything. I didn't know about MIDI either. So, and then I had Fruity Loops and Sony Acid Pro.
nice.
And a fuzz pedal. I put everything through the fuzz pedal, the Hyper Fuzz from Boss. But I mean, when I first started playing live, there have been many eras of playing live. I used to play Blush Response as a live band, because I did 3 albums where I sang and wrote songs. So it would be me singing and usually playing a synth or a guitar, another guitar player who also might play synth, and a drummer. But then when I moved to Berlin, I decided to go with this live electronic techno approach. Then I started just bringing the modular out and a drum machine or two. When I first showed up to Berlin, I had two modular cases, like a 12U and a 6U. And then I had an Octatrack, and that's all I had. And and a Pro 2 that I shipped. And then I sold the Pro 2 almost immediately, and I got an Analog Rhythm, because I got a gig right away. Valter, who used to run Coma, was doing a little event in a basement. And he's like, hey, you're here, want to do something? So, and I needed to figure it out. So I got the Rhythm to have live drums. And that was that.
And you never look back. You're like, this is...
The Rhythm changed my life.
I often hear people say that, you know, like, because of its capabilities.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So 16 when you started, and that was when you were... So that's when you were growing up in Miami.
Well, actually, when I turned 16, my family moved to upstate New York.
Okay.
Yeah, and I had a lot of time on my hands.
Were you influenced, like, so growing up in Miami, then moving to New York, was your musical influence coming from any point in your childhood, like from any specific location, or was it more just specific bands?
I wouldn't say location had an effect at all. I would say bands, definitely. Like, the earliest stuff I liked when I was a kid was like nu metal, like Korn. You know, I'm talking 8, 9 years old. And then my friend showed me Prodigy, and there was another band called Orgy that I liked. And then Nine Inch Nails, of course. And then what I always liked more was the bands that had electronic elements, because my impression of electronic music before that was something silly, like, I don't know, Eiffel 65 or something. You know, I didn't think electronic music could be edgy. But when I heard Prodigy, I was like, holy fuck, you know, this is what I want, some attitude. And then I just went further down that rabbit hole. And then when I lived in upstate New York and I had nothing to do, I went really deep, and I got into stuff like Depeche Mode, Gary Numan, Skinny Puppy, Frontline Assembly, Atari Teenage Riot, Autechre came a bit later on than that, which completely blew my mind. Aphex Twin, of course, I should mention. All kinds of random artists like Venetian Snare, Somatic Responses. I really love IDM stuff. There's too many to name. I could go forever.
Nice. So it's interesting. Like, I love hearing your influences, because it just seems like from beginning you've had, whether you knew at that time, you had like a specific sound or like vision. So when do you feel like, did your vision for your music unfold right away, or did it happen as you got older and started, like as you were experimenting? Like, yeah, like did you know, like even though you were gravitated toward these bands, or was it?
I just always like heavy shit. Okay. So it was always, I mean, I really like synth pop and new wave stuff like Duran Duran. I saw Duran Duran live at Madison Square Garden with the original lineup. It was one of the best shows ever.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I always like things on the heavier side. And so it just, I don't know, that's where I feel comfortable. So I guess the sound itself was always there, but obviously the level of skill was not always there. So it took a long time.
Tying into your influences, I saw that you did some work for Christian Castro and for Fear Factor, which are complete opposites in the spectrum. And I'm assuming most people do not know who Christian Castro is, a Mexican pop singer. Am I correct? Mm.
He did a record called La Esfinga, El Cantante de la Muerte, I believe it was called. And it was like a side project he did because Christian is actually a metalhead, believe it or not. And he wanted to do a record, a rock record. So we had Vampiro from Maná playing guitar on it. We had the producer, a producer named David Bottrell, who produced Tool, Smashing Pumpkins, and Placebo, producing the record. And then they brought me in to play synths on it because they wanted someone who could do stuff like Nine Inch Nails. That was the actual, like, prompt, basically. And then, so, yeah, I play synths all over it. I was there for, like, 3 days, and we did all the synths. And then they did editing and whatever later. I was supposed to actually go on the tour, but I don't know if they ever toured it in the end. And I was in another band with Joey from Slipknot at the time, so I never got the call to do the tour, and I don't know if they ever did it. I never heard from Christian after that, but he was super cool.
That's a super interesting duality. I've also always been back and forth between live bands and, you know, doing my live project. How do you feel about it today? Like, if you had the chance, would you go back live on tour, or are you staying with live and modular as a solo artist?
Solo.
Mm. Oh, it's funny you ask that, because that's been a big thing on my mind lately. And I'm like, I have this new album Sprawl coming out, but I've been writing more new material and playing more guitar. There's one right behind me on the couch, and it's kind of hard to see, but and writing like kind of song based stuff again, because at the moment, I'm not saying forever, but I'm a little over the club thing. And I just really enjoy the tour life, the tour bus. I also just have the itch to write songs again. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think there's a certain camaraderie, right? Too, when you're playing in a band.
I find being on a tour bus, even a van, honestly, is much preferable to dealing with airports. Like when you're DJ touring or, you know, whatever, you fly in the day of the gig, you play your gig, probably really late at night, and then you got to go the next morning to the airport to either go home or go to another gig. And you do that 3 days in a row with no sleep. But on a tour bus, you show up, you do sound check, you can do whatever the fuck you want, and then you play. And then as long as you get on the bus at the right time, you have nothing to worry about, and you just go to sleep in your bunk. It's so easy. So much better.
Nice. Yeah.
Rockstar life that people think we have versus reality, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I hate and the tour bus is so comfortable because you can just, you know, read a book, play a video game, mess with a groove box. So
when you're writing music, like what is your process, and is it different when you're approaching writing songs, like as you said, songs, or versus like the music that you wrote for Sprawl, for example?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference to the approach, but right now I'm working on developing a new approach, I should say. So all the stuff you've heard from me previously, was made in the exactly like this video we just showed, where it's like, all right, get a bunch of sounds together and then morph them, have this evolution. And that's a lot of trial and error, where I'm patching things and I'm listening to the result and be like, does this make me feel something? Can I build on this? When I'm writing songs, it's a bit more deliberate. And obviously, I haven't done material like that in a while, so it's going to take a while for anyone to hear any of that. But I should say, like, just the other day, I was in a burger shop by my apartment, and I suddenly had an entire song come to me fully formed in my head with lyrics and everything. So I had to, like, run home and start recording it. I had the beat, I had the bass line, I had it all, and, like, a few words, and I was like, I got this. And then it was just, you know, play a keyboard melody, make a drum beat, and more focused on the melodious aspects. What I'm finding now is it's hard to do stuff that's so direct with the melody and the harmony, but also have an interesting sound design edge. So I'm trying to figure out how to meet those two things in the middle to create kind of evolutionary tracks that also have something maybe catchy about them or have kind of a structure. And where does that fit? And how do you meld those two things? I'm working on that. I was just doing something now, which ended up being a complete disaster, but it was an attempt. So
sometimes it has to be a disaster, right? Then you pull some information out of that.
Yeah.
I want to touch on your, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I wanted to touch on your work with sound design with Electron Yamaha and with Arturia. How'd that come about? Did they approach you? Like, how does that happen to somebody?
I didn't do sound design for Yamaha. What I did for Yamaha is I did a performance promo video with their Mod X FM synthesizer. And that came through the drummer I'm playing with on the video. His name is Merlin Ettore. He's an incredible drummer, and he also makes really great music under the name Sorcery. And he's released on Midnight Shift and also, I believe, on Kangding Ray's label. So that was that. But with Electron, it was a good friend of mine worked at Electron. And at the time, it was when the Digitone was just being announced, or it was before it was announced, and he just asked me, what do you know about FM synthesis? And I was like, that's my shit. And I also knew in the back of my head, I was like, he's asking me that because he wants me to do something about FM synthesis. So I was like, yeah, I know everything about FM. I'm the FM master. and then they're like, all right, we're going to send you something. Can you make a sound set? And it was the Digitone. But excuse me, that's not the first thing, because the first thing was that I played an Electron Machine Night. And it was me and the Bug and Flo Dan and Frank Brettschneider and one other person. I'm sorry, I forgot who you are, but it was a pretty interesting lineup at Arena Club. And then that was kind of the way in. And then later after that is when they asked me about the Digitone. And then I did a sound set for the Rhythm, and I did a second sound set for Digitone. And then I also did for the Digitone Keys of the Model Cycles, and who knows, maybe something in the future. I might have done one more, I forget by now. Arturia was similar. They contacted me because they liked my work and they wanted me to work on the Micro Freak, I think was the first thing. I did some VST presets, but the Micro Freak, I made the stock wavetable bank that's in it. And then some presets as well, and then more stuff after that. I think I made presets for like five or six now of the VSTs.
What does it look like? Like, what's the process like? How long does it take? What does it take? It's not a normal thing for every artist to like to say, oh, I'm designing a wavetable.
That was like a trial and error process. I had done it once before for Industrial Music Electronics. They asked me to make a wavetable for the Piston Honda Mark III, just one, which I did. It's in the factory wavetables, but with Arturia, it was like, okay, I got to make a bank of these. I think I made 20 and they used 16, as far as I remember. And it was just trying out cool things. I sampled my brother talking on one because I use Synthetech Wave Edit, that software. And I was just drawing in waveforms, putting in samples, just trying out whatever worked and whatever sounded cool.
That's awesome. Very cool. Now, are these things like they live on all these devices now? So people, if people are out there, they're watching and listening to this, they can look for your sounds or try some of your sounds in any of the devices? I know you mentioned presets for the Microfreak, but also for the Digitone and...
Digitone keys, Rhythm. Cool. There are a bunch of them. I just did sounds for the PWM Mantis for the factory set. There's also a sound set out for me for Hydrosynth on their website. And God, there's one or two more I'm forgetting, but everywhere. They're everywhere.
So. Nice. No, like that's so kind of segueing into that, like your incredible like sound design, you also have a YouTube channel. So we're and a Patreon, correct? You where you share not only your sounds, but like some of your techniques and like how, when did you, was that, what prompted you to start your YouTube channel? Was that?
Well, COVID happened and no one could play anymore. I remember in 2020, COVID, I had just done, it was like January, end of January, I played the Electron Model Cycles launch in Berlin and then, and I had like a whole stacked year of bookings. I was going to play in China, US tour and this and that and all out the window. So I had to scramble and think of something to do. And it took me a year and a few people were telling me that I should do it. I had a lot of concerns before doing it because I thought that if I was a person who started reviewing gear, that it would make people not take my music seriously or something, or like kill all the mystique I have as an artist, or I don't know, just these kinds of questions in my head. Like, is it going to be a really bad move for me? But I'm happy that I finally did it. And, that I listened to the people who were advising me, because it worked out really well. And I got a lot of support from all the companies that I review. So big thanks to them and all the people who watch it. It's really cool. And I also think it actually helped my perception as an artist because, I put everything on display. So, I'm really happy with how it turned out. It's a lot of work and it feels overwhelming a lot of the time because I do them quite fast and the gear comes in a lot, but it's still awesome. And also I got to play with all the new gear. So
yeah, that's not a bad thing. I mean, I feel like, cause I, you know, I've watched your channel and you've definitely influenced me and making some purchases, but there's something like in, it just seems like you're, well, after meeting you, it's like you are yourself in the video. And I think that is important and what plays a lot into keeping your artistry, you know what I mean? And keeping yourself as an artist first, and that has a YouTube channel sometimes, I guess, as opposed to be, like some people approach it as like, this is my YouTube channel, this is my job, and like, that's what they do versus your approach. And yeah, I think both approaches are great, but I feel like the way you're doing it, it suits you. In my
Thanks.
Opinion. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's a really
It's mostly
delicate.
Out of laziness.
I really liked your video, the Vic video, because I was on the fence about that module. And then, you know, because there's so many great and interesting modules. But then when I saw it, I was like, oh, fuck, yeah.
That thing rules. Like,
that solidified it. Yeah, no, I got it.
Well, I'm glad you liked the video. Yeah. I had that thing for like 6 or 7 months before doing the video. Sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
No. I'm just saying, like, it popped on my radar and I had it on my radar for a long time. I was like, oh, like, you know, I'm sure you deal with this, like the turmoil of, you know, what do you use? What gear? You know, there's always new and interesting things. And then, yeah. And then your video popped up and I was like, yeah, I should do it.
I think every time you got it.
Yeah, I love it.
I think every time you think about, you know, that really delicate balance of demystifying who we are as artists behind closed doors and then showing up super vulnerable in front of a camera and triple thinking what you're going to do or how you're going to say things. But if you really think about people like me starting a live journey, the first thing I want to do is go and look for people like you, which are other artists that are touring, that are doing it, not just people that review a product to review a product. I want to know from people that use the thing and how it's acting and reacting. And it's super important that you know, to keep that in mind, that the people looking for those videos are people that are going to tour with the same things. And so I'm starting to do the same things, and I go into my head a lot as well. So it's good to know that, you know, things are out there, and I'm always telling myself, no, it's fine. People want to know.
They do want to know, actually, is what I found out. So I think you have the right idea there.
Yeah. So gear, what are you taking on the road? What is your actual touring equipment?
When I play with Frontline Assembly, just take my modular, my live case, two rows. The last tour I did with them, I had Voices from Noise Engineering, the Laquelic and the Curses, because they had looping envelopes. And I didn't want to do anything based on notes or sequencing. So what I instead did is hand-tuned oscillators, and then I would have the envelopes looping, and I would play with the envelope times to get, like, you know, like sputtering things, and then rhythmically open and close the master filter in my live case, which is the Endorphins Ghost. So great if filter. You saw me live with them, that's what I was doing then. When I play solo sets at the moment, I will bring my two-row modular, same live case, although the modules are a bit different now. Main sequencer is the Nerd sequencer. And then I have the Analog Rhythm providing all the drums. And then lately now I've been bringing out the Octatrack to do additional stuff like sampled breakbeats and pads and stuff, because I felt I was kind of reaching the limit of what I could do with two rows, and trying to fit it all in was becoming a bit crowded, and not in a good way, in the case, in that I was having to sacrifice one function over the other. Like, I brought a bitbox in to do that breakbeat stuff and have dialogue and all that, like film samples, and it ended up being a mess. But yeah, I did a performance at SO36 in Berlin, and it's on my YouTube page, and it's with the Octatrack rhythm and modular setup that I'm talking about. Exactly. So
are you touring, like, are you recording, because you're touring your new album, correct? So are you using the exact same things that you used in the studio, and that's how you, like, what you have in mind, saying, okay, this is what I'm going to tour with, so I'm going to record based on that? Or is it the other way around? You first record and then you just play live whatever you want?
Yeah, it's like completely unrelated.
Got it.
Like, there's maybe sequences from some of the tracks stored in the Nerd sequencer, and maybe some of the drum samples and the patterns, but and like, for example, the pad samples are pulled straight from the stems, but I'm not trying to replay the songs in any way. I just want to, like, I'm putting the sounds on display, you know. I'm the sound design guy, so I want to just hit you with, like, here's the craziest fucking sound I can make for an hour. And then, you know, listen to the record if you want more.
With you. Right. I played that show with you in Berlin at Ohm, and you had a fantastic set. But so that was your setup for there as well, right?
That's the setup I described. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that was a great show.
Thank you. It was a fun night. Your set was really powerful too. So
thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Like, I feel like the overall vibe, like, Superbooth is such a great time to be in Berlin. Berlin is awesome, as you know, anyway, but for those who don't live there, it's like a great time to hang out with artists, play or listen to shows, and see cool new gear, like all of it.
Definitely.
Tell us more about your tour with Frontline Assembly. Like, how did that come about?
It's basically all a chance meeting, like 2010, I want to say. I don't know the exact year, but Alan Wilder of Depeche Mode was doing a solo tour for his Recoil project. A couple friends of mine were doing a road trip across the US, and they followed the tour. So he got to talking to them at a few of the dates, and he asked them if they knew anyone who had an MS-20. And I believe this was before the reissue, so I had the original MS-20. And they called me, they're like, hey, Alan Wilder needs you to come to Baltimore because he needs to rent an MS-20. So he'll use it in Baltimore and New York, and you can ride back with everyone. What do you think? And I was like, well, fuck yeah. So I got on a bus.
Did you believe him at first? Did you,
yeah, yeah. Like, my, it was my friends.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, they wouldn't mess with me. But anyway, I actually found the picture of him playing it. And I had it on my Instagram story the other day, but I can find it again because I was looking through an old hard drive because I've told this story a couple times now, and I was like, I better find that picture so people believe me. Anyway, so I bring him the synth, we meet, blah, blah, blah. But opening for him are two guys. One is Daniel Meyer of the band Howl Job. He also does projects like Architect and Liebknecht. He's awesome. Lovely guy. And also Reese Fulber from Frontline Assembly was opening with his project Conjure One. And Reese and I and Daniel and I hit it off like right away. And it was kind of instant bromance. So Reese, after that, just hit me up some amount of time later and was like, hey, man, so I want to hear what you're working on. And I sent him a demo for what was at the time my second album, but it was like a little clip, and I guess he heard it and he was impressed by it. And he's like, this is cool. I need someone to help me out on remixes and stuff when I'm just out of ideas. So I helped him with some programming here and there on a couple remixes. And then later the first thing he brought me in to do for real was Fear Factory on their album, The Industrialist. And he just wanted me to just, they would send me the raw track demos and they'd be like, just put 1,000 sounds on there and we'll pick what we like. So that's what I did. And if you listen to that album, I'm on pretty much, there's only, I think, 2 or 3 tracks I'm not on. But like, for example, the track New Messiah, all the intro synth sounds and stuff are me, and the same for like Difference Engine and a few others. Recharger, there's a break in the middle where you hear like a crazy distorted synth sound. That's my Polyvolver. And I was using like Polyvolver, Virus, Surge Modular, Metasonics Modular, all kinds of shit.
Some heavy stuff. Yeah, that's awesome.
So fast forward a few years, Frontline had a guy in the band named Jeremy Inkle who sadly passed away. And that meant they had a slot opened, and Reese is one of my best friends. So he was like, hey, you want to come do this? And there I was.
Amazing.
What an amazing opportunity. Yeah. All of it. Like just the meeting, like just the connection, everything.
Yeah. It was a big lesson for me because I remember at the time of the Alan Wilder thing, it was like Halloween or something. And I was like, oh, my girlfriend's going to be mad if I ditch her. And then I was like, no, I better go ditch her and go do this. So that taught me like, you need to seize every opportunity. If you don't go, if you don't say yes, if you don't do these things, nothing's going to happen.
100%.
I think we lost you, Shonda.
We lost you.
For Varsity.
Oh, I'm here. Sorry. I think I muted. I was saying that's great advice, you know, especially as artists, like not those opportunities don't come up for everyone. And if you don't jump and put in the work, it's just, you're going to miss out. What other, speaking of advice, so that's a good segue. We always ask every artist, like, what would be the advice you would give to somebody who wants to play live? They're just starting out. What's some piece of advice that you would?
Don't worry about fucking up because you're going to do it all the time, no matter how good you are.
Also, nice. What audio interface do you have that has 30 ins and 30 outs?
I have an Army Fireface UFX, and I have more inputs and outputs with ADAT on it.
Got it. Yeah.
Very cool.
We're dealing with that right now, as you can imagine.
Well, if you get the newer Fireface UFX 3, it has MADI, and you can have like 120 inputs through the MADI shit. So there's your answer.
Thank you.
Army's the best, in my opinion.
Crazy. Yeah. I heard the Berlin sirens.
Oh, yeah. They're nonstop. So,
yeah. I can only imagine how many people have sampled that for their tracks, especially in Berlin.
I'll tell you a couple times. It was coming through when I was doing vocals the other day, and it sounded right. And I was like, fuck, I wish I recorded that.
You should. Tell us a little bit about your record label before we go.
So Megastructure was just another COVID idea. I was like, what can I do with my time? And I had some issues with record labels that were just being very like trying to actively redirect parts of my music, which I was not down for. And I felt very disrespected by. And then, you know, maybe other labels didn't pay me royalties when they should have and others. So I was like, fuck this. I'm going to start a label, you know, and I'm going to do this and see what happens. And so I took, the first thing was my Hakai project, and then the second thing was my Conquerors project, and the third thing was me solo with my Voidin album. And it was all just like just trying to put out my stuff without any fear of someone trying to like rewrite my music, because it was really intense with one label where they were literally like, take this sound out of this track, make two versions of this track focusing on this sound and that sound and stuff like that. And I was like, I'm not doing any of that shit. So I didn't want to deal with that anymore. It really turned me off with labels for a while. And yeah, so then I was like, okay. And I'm also going to put out like other weirdos who don't fit, because what a lot of the stuff I dealt with was saying like, oh yeah, this track is great, but it has a break before a minute and 30 seconds. So I would never DJ it. So I'm not going to put out this track. And just ridiculous requests, in my opinion. And it's like, are we not making art here? So, and then also, you know, you hear stuff like, this is too hard, it's not techno, or this is not whatever enough. So it's like, no, I just want the music to be the music, so I'm going to put out whoever that I think is cool and maybe doesn't fit anywhere else and see what happens. And that's that.
Nice. Yeah, like, you don't want to be put into, like, some kind of box of, like, making, like, a specific genre just to... just to suit, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's not just that, but I feel like you end up not seeing the back end story of, you know, royalties.
The artist or the...
And the artist is a person. We get super disrespected by the record labels, not A, telling you to change your story as an artist and what you want to put out, and B, you actually never get results. You don't see a penny of what you end up making. And it's like, why am I sending my music to somebody else? Am I growing? Are they putting me on a platform? Like, why? So yeah, no, I totally respect. Are you seeing what you wanted to see on the back end of things from the record?
No.
Yeah. That's what I discovered with my label as well.
I mean, my stuff always sells decently. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to, you know, I believe in the music, so I like, I'm doing a big compilation release next, which I haven't announced yet because it's taken some time to get together. But I'm just happy to support.
That's going on the label?
Yeah. I'm happy to support cool stuff when I can. You know, this is the thing, is that now with all the other shit I have going on, I don't have so much time for it. So we'll see if it lasts. But yeah.
And then now your upcoming release is Sprawl, and that comes out July 5th, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because I jumped on that pre-order. Sick. I can't wait.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about that one. It's not just pure techno. It's not pure anything. There's guest vocalists. There's my vocals. It was just experimenting, trying to try new things, and then, you know, break free of the mold a little bit. Because like I did a couple releases last year, Neuroscape and In Exile, that were very techno, and for me that was like the final statement on that. I think I did everything I could do there. So Sprawl is opening up to the greater whatever, and hence it's a Sprawl. So
very nice. Hey, I have another question for you. Then randomly, do you ever listen to other genres, like completely off cuff, like house music or? Or possible. I know you mentioned synth pop, but
I mean, I definitely like a lot of stuff. I mean, I actually adore a lot of ambient stuff. And I don't just mean like dark ambient. I mean like full on new age, like Tangerine Dream and Steve Roach and Robert Rich, like playing the flute over the 30-minute pad. I'm all about that.
Nice.
Yeah,
I was just curious, you know, because you've been so driven and focused on like like specific genres in that. So I'm just curious to see if you, do you ever pull influences from like, say, Steve Roach or those ambient?
Definitely. Styles? I mean, that track in the video just now was me intentionally being like, I want to do something that goes from ambient to dance music and back. That was literally what I had in my mind. So.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to see. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Roach.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I had an opportunity to see Steve Roach play live, and it was incredible. Just like an ambient, lovely ambient bath of music.
Yeah, he's amazing. I'm a huge fan. Like, I watched all his Time Room streams. I wish I could see him live. You've seen those, right? On his YouTube, he has like 2-hour live sets on them.
No. Live set was over 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And thank God it was like seating. You know what I mean? Because that's like the perfect type of music to just sit and take in all the elements and everything. So, yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm really excited for you to go on this live tour live again. Because I feel like that feeds your soul to then say, oh my God, I'm on tour. I have to go back to the dungeons. And it's like this never ending cycle of music and creativity that feeds the soul. For those.
Thanks.
For those who've done both. You can't break that cycle.
Yeah, I mean, why not do it all? Like, I could foresee a future where I get booked for like live modular sets and then live band sets at the same time. Like, why not? And also DJ sets, because I do that too. You know, I would do anything. So,
do you have specific artists in mind that you're going to work with in terms of the band, going in the band direction? You don't have to say who they are, but like, do you kind of have like a vision with that?
I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Right now, I'm focused on just developing the new sound.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
I posted one clip on Instagram today of just trying out things with the guitar and the modular all running together, and it sounded pretty cool. So I was happy with it.
Very nice. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Like, you're all the spectrums of things that I've seen you post and everything. I've always either like, I'm always learning something, and like sonically it's always like on point.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Like, keep making music and, you know, inspiring all of us. I have a couple minutes to ask you. Where did the name Blush Response come from?
It's from Blade Runner. There's a scene where Deckard goes to meet Tyrell, and Tyrell brings out Rachel, and he's going to administer the Voight Conf exam, and Tyrell says Blush Response, and I just heard that. I was like, that sounds cool, and I wanted that. And then also, apparently it's a song, it is a song on the soundtrack. Vangelis took that and made that a song title. But the funnier story is that I didn't know is that Band the Killers, the singer Brandon Flowers, apparently had a band called Blush Response. So when I first started, I used to get hate mail from Killers fans. Like, how does it feel that Brandon Flowers is famous and you suck?
That's horrible.
You should make a track just like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's on an old email I don't have access to, but I thought that was hilarious. I think GQ magazine even hit me up once thinking I was the guy from that band and wanted to interview me about my time with him. And I thought, like, should I fucking do it or not? But I was too honest in the end.
You should have done it.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. On that note, it was it's amazing that you are here. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it and sharing the performance. I would love to have you back sometime in the future, especially now when you're starting this new music adventure, just to recap on that. And so definitely need to have you come back for that.
Anytime.
Awesome. All right. On that note, thank you all for tuning in. This is Transduction Signal on Dublab Radio. I'm Travarsi.
I'm Orly Gal.
And tune in next month. Thank you.